Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
What links Sam Altman, Apple Steve Jobs and the former Twitter boss Jack Dorsey? Well, they're all boomerang CEOs. But what does that mean? Well, to explain it all, I'm joined by our own business journalist, Adam Maguire. So, Adam, boomerang CEOs, what are they?
Yeah, it's a long-standing tradition for CEOs. They get ousted or they resign, they retire, only for them to return a while later. And some of the best-known companies, best-known bosses rank in that list of boomerang CEOs. You named a few of them. Steve Jobs at Apple is an example. Michael Dell of Dell, a boomerang CEO. Jack Dorsey at Twitter. Howard Schultz at Starbucks. And Bob Iger at Disney, all examples of boomerang CEOs. It's fair to say, though, Altman probably wins in terms of the shortest time frame between being ousted and coming back. It was only a matter of days. Usually it takes at least a couple of months, usually a couple of years.
Yeah, it was less than a week, wasn't
it? Yeah,
he?
Yeah. So that's quite remarkable. But yeah, he's one of many boomerang CEOs.
Now, I noticed there weren't any female names in that list.
No, I found one example of a female boomerang CEO at a big company, Susan Cameron of Reynolds America, which they're neither house nor household names. It's a big US tobacco firm that makes brands like Camel. Other than that, though, they are very hard to come by amongst big companies. Part of that is because there are still so few female CEOs of large companies. According to Fortune, just over 10% of the current Fortune 500 companies, that's the biggest US companies in terms of revenue, are led by a female. So one in 10 led by a female. And a quarter of those only became CEO in the last year. So it's a really shocking statistic in this day and age. If you look at smaller companies, the spread is a little bit better. But in terms of big companies, still very male heavy. And some claim as well that when there are female CEOs of big firms, they don't tend to boomerang because they do a better job at the company. They do a better job in succession management, so they don't have to come back then to save the show. So
we might touch on that in a while. You know, how much of this is associated with ego? You know,
nobody
can do it like me.
Yeah, there is an element of that. Yeah, and there's a kind of founder myth as well in terms of, you know, that they're the people with the vision to turn things around.
Well, we go to one of the most famous examples is Steve Jobs, and it's a very interesting case study as well.
Yeah, this is the man who really shaped so much of our modern tech, from the way our desktop computers look to the touchscreen smartphone. Not obviously the only person responsible for all that, but very, very influential in it. So he co-founded Apple back in 1976 with Steve Wozniak. And it became one of the big players in the burgeoning personal computer market, going toe-to-toe with big players like IBM. By the 80s, though, he felt like he needed someone with a management kind of view, because he wasn't a manager, to come in and take a better look at the company and maybe kind of improve marketing as well. So he lured a man called John Sculley, who was president of PepsiCo at the time. And he used the legendary, really, you know, typical Steve Jobs over-the-top line of, do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugared water, or do you want a chance to change the world? And that's how he brought him over. So Sculley came over as CEO, freeing up Jobs to do work on the actual computers. And it started off as a relatively good relationship, but it soured very, very quickly. Jobs, the first computer he made after this move was the Lisa, and it was a flop, basically, massively overpriced. But there was also this odd management style that he had, which butted up against the way Sculley operated in a much more traditional managerial kind of style.
So he wasn't just bad at being a manager, according to himself. He's bad at working with a manager.
Yeah, exactly, in the kind of traditional constraints that a company would tend to work in. So Sculley tried to get Jobs and the Macintosh division under control. That prompted Jobs to then try and get Sculley ousted altogether, having lured him in himself. When Sculley got word of this, he managed to get the board on his side, and it was Jobs who was shown the door ultimately. But after a fairly positive run initially, Sculley was ousted as well in 1993 because the company wasn't doing particularly well. Apple then spent the next couple of years losing a lot of ground to rivals, software, hardware falling behind. And by the mid-90s, it was on the verge of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And it basically needed to find a way to upgrade its software to try and compete. But it couldn't do that in-house. It didn't have the expertise. So its Hail Mary pass was to buy another company that was doing that. And then they could kind of absorb that expertise. So they snapped up a company in 1997 called Next, or NEXT, which was founded and headed up by none other than Steve Jobs. And you can imagine how much he enjoyed that phone call. We'd like to buy the company from you, please. $427 million at the time as well. A huge amount of money. So it was finalized in February 97. Jobs essentially became the CEO again by July, and he set about then restructuring and revitalizing the company. And the software that they bought in Next became the basis for iTunes, for Mac OS, the operating software for the App Store. And of course, Jobs then helped to bring in the iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, all that stuff. And in August 2011, just 2 months before he died, Apple became the most valuable company in the world, stock market listed company in the world. So a really, really remarkable turnaround and definitely a successful second stint as CEO.
So the cornerstone of what he eventually did at Apple belonged to this company he bought for $467 million.
That he set up after he was kicked out of Apple. He set it up and it became...
Oh, so he did iTunes and he did the App Store and all of that under the guise of Next.
Yeah, and then Apple bought it, brought him back in, and that became the kind of cornerstone for their kind of revival, really.
Okay, it's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah. Now, Jack Dorsey's return to Twitter, that mightn't be as fondly remembered.
No, we're still kind of getting to grips with the consequences of Dorsey's second term as Twitter CEO. So just to remind you, Dorsey was one of four founders of Twitter back in March 2006. He was CEO for the initial period where they saw a lot of growth, got a lot of investment, but he stepped aside relatively quickly afterwards, late 2008. He was still heavily involved in the company, though. He was the chairman and he would have been involved in the actual production of the product. He was instrumental in focusing on quality and service and on growing users rather than trying to make money, which was a big problem for Twitter over the years because it did grow well,
but it couldn't make money.
But Dorsey also then, while he was chairman, went up and set a company called Square, now known as Block, which operates some of the card payment machines. You'd see the smaller ones in maybe, you know, coffee carts and stuff like that around the country. Fast forward though to 2015, Dick Costolo is the Twitter CEO, steps down. Dorsey returns then as interim CEO in 2015, but ends up staying in that role till late 2011 when he stepped down once again. And he later claimed that one of the reasons he had to step down the second time was because he had a failed attempt at getting Elon Musk onto the board of Twitter. And you can see where this is going now and where we are now. Because, you know, even though he wasn't CEO, even at the time when he wasn't, he was still hugely important, still a big shareholder. So when Musk did start making moves at getting involved in Twitter, Dorsey was the person he spoke to. He became pivotal. At one stage, Jack Dorsey said Musk cares deeply about our world and Twitter's role in it. And of course, when Musk ultimately acquired Twitter for $44 billion, massively inflated price, Dorsey got a big chunk of that.
Of course he did.
$1 billion was what his stake was worth. Interestingly though, he didn't cash it in. He actually rolled it into the new company. So he's still a Twitter or an ex-shareholder. He still obviously thinks that Musk is doing the right thing because otherwise he would have sold his stake. But at the same time, Dorsey has also set up another company called Blue Sky, which many see as the real alternative to Twitter. So he's kind of hedging his bets. He's still involved in Twitter or X, but he's also setting up a rival service as well.
That story's not over yet.
No.
And what about Disney then and Bob Iger?
Yeah, they're still going through their second coming of the boomerang CEO, Bob Iger. He first became CEO of Disney in 2005 and he really revolutionised the company. He's the one responsible for acquiring toy story maker Pixar. And actually, there's a link to another boomerang CEO we mentioned. Steve Jobs was responsible for creating Pixar while he was in his wilderness years between Apple CEO terms. And he made billions from its sale to Disney. He also became the biggest shareholder, single shareholder in Disney after it was bought, after it bought Pixar. Iger, though, also went on to buy Lucasfilm. So he bought the Star Wars franchises. He bought Marvel. So he acquired all the films like Iron Man and Captain America, all those rights. And eventually paid $71 billion to Rupert Murdoch to take over Fox, bringing in The Simpsons and all the other things that Fox Studios made over the years. And it's generally believed he overspent, especially on Fox, but having those franchises and that big library actually proved crucial then later on, because when Disney Plus was launched in 2019, they had this massive catalogue of not only the Disney films, but all this other stuff that they could actually put up there and make available. And that was essentially Iger's crowning achievement. He retired in early 2020 and it was kind of went out in a blaze of glory, had, you know, set Disney up for the future, was taking on Netflix and all that stuff. And he was replaced by another Bob Chapek, who was in charge of the parks division up until then. A bit of an unlucky general, though. He came in February 2020, so just at the start of the pandemic in terms of the impact it was having, which meant the parks closed down, the cinemas weren't open, so they couldn't show films and make money that way. So he really was in a difficult position from the start. But he also restructured the company in a way that really annoyed the creatives in Disney. And he also seemed to have a hard time managing the talent. There was a big row with Scarlett Johansson, for example, that ended up in a court case over the money earned from one of the Marvel films as well. So, he didn't do a particularly good job. And it was felt he was given a bit of a poison chalice by Iger because, you know, you're coming into from not only was Iger so successful, he also left him a big debt pile and a massively bloated company to try and fix. So within 2 years, Chapek was ousted, basically. And the handy thing for Iger, though, was that he had done a lot of the hard work for him. He had cut a lot of the jobs and all that kind of stuff. So Iger could come back as the...
In a blaze of glory.
Yeah, he came back as the hero. And again, it was, you know, well, you did such a great job. You need to come back and save us again. Mm-hmm. Now, Iger has made cuts of his own since he came in as well. But I said, JPEG did a lot of the hard work for him.
Yeah, gosh. And we're going now to somebody who did three stints as CEO of a company. This is Howard Schultz.
Yeah, exactly. This is probably fairly unique, at least to big companies. He had three separate terms as CEO of Starbucks. First was in 1986. He wasn't actually a founder of the company, but he was responsible for creating the Starbucks that we know today, because the original Starbucks was selling coffee beans, basically. It wasn't actually a cafe. And Schultz was working for them and tried to convince the founders, you should start making coffee and selling it. Eventually, he left, set up his own company, and Starbucks invested in it. And then he bought the Starbucks brand and created the chain that we know today. By the time he ended his first stint as CEO in 2000, they had more than 3,000 outlets worldwide. So he went from nothing to 3,000 during that term. He came back in 2008 during the height of the financial crisis when they were struggling. And he set about really wielding the axe here. He closed 600 unprofitable stores in 2008 with 12,000 people losing their jobs. Then another 300 just a couple of months later with 6,000 more losing their jobs. So really cut back massively. But by the time he ended his second term in 2016, Starbucks was even bigger than ever before. 25,000 outlets by the time he stepped down the second time. And then he came back again last year as interim CEO. Back in March of last year, he held it until March of this year. But he's only 70, so you never know. He could
come back again.
Could come back for a fourth term, maybe.
Just looking at his first hiatus from 2000 to 2008, like, can you imagine going back to a job after 8 years out of it?
Yeah.
It's a strange thing to do, isn't it?
It is a strange thing. And I mean, things would have changed dramatically in that time in terms of the market and in terms of competitors and everything else. But yeah, but he came back and he made the company much more profitable. Mightn't have been good for the workers who he laid off and for all the cutbacks they would have made, but you know, the value of the company skyrocketed in that time. So he obviously did something that the shareholders liked.
Yeah, and then grew it again. Now, going back to the logic behind this and the reasoning, like, why do we have so many boomerang CEOs?
Yeah, I mean, like, because you'd usually expect a CEO will retire because, you know, they're older or they've made their money or they want to go and do something differently, or they're kicked out because they haven't done a very good job. So why would they be coming back? But it's obviously not always the case. And it's worth noting that pretty much all of these examples that I cite, they're founders. Now, as I said, Howard Schultz wasn't a founder of Starbucks, but he did effectively found the Starbucks that we know today. He effectively created that company. So Bob Iger is the only one who isn't really a founder of one of the companies we're talking about. And I think what happens is that when a company is struggling, the investors get a bit misty-eyed about the founders and they think, you know, God, the good old days when they were in charge. There's also, you know, an element of that these people have an innate understanding of the business, or they have the passion to make it work, because someone else might not understand the business, but obviously the person who helped set it up really will. Mm-hmm. And they'll also maybe have a bit more skin in the game in terms of turning it around, whereas someone else might come in and say, actually, let's just sell it up, or let's just liquidate the whole business. It's not going to work. Whereas a founder might, you know, have the will to kind of keep working and make sure that, you know, from as you said, an ego point of view, I need to make sure that I have my legacy, that this company is a success.
But it's a risk. It's a
massive risk. Yeah. Although, again, you know, when they're founders and they have a couple of years as CEO, successful company, they leave, they've probably made their millions. So it's not a huge risk to come back. And, you know, they can also, you know, so Bob Iger, for example, could come back and say, well, look, you know, I had to clean up the mess someone else left me, even though they were only there for 2 years. So you can kind of blame it on the other guy as well when you come back the second time.
More of a risk for the company, you know, to go back.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because sometimes, you know, the market may have moved on and the person might not have the ideas they need for the modern world.
Well, Adam, thank you very much. It's really interesting, isn't it? Adam McGuire there, who is the RTÉ business journalist who joins us here every week. Now, still to come on the programme after 11 this morning, the Cork Library protests and the impact on the staff there. Brian O'Connell reports, are we losing our accents? The expert view on whether we all sound American now. And as Russia intensifies attacks on Ukraine, we're going to get the latest from Kyiv. Now, though, it's time for a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.